You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
And tonight, we are...
Hey Queens, what's going on? Welcome back to another episode of the Queendom Podcast. I'm super excited about this week as we have our first musician joining us, and not just any musician. This woman that's joining us this week has been with the show since the early UK tour days, so the days of Christina, Zuki, Amy, Nat, the whole crew out there, out on tour. So Katie Richardson is currently the MD as well, playing Joan. For anyone that isn't up to scratch with the show, the keyboard, I don't know how else to explain it. She does explain it throughout the show. So stick around, I guess. That's the biggest thing. You'll hear us plug it a fair bit throughout the shows. Sunday sessions started last week, folks. Sunday sessions, check out sundaysessions.live. If you want the link directly, it's in the description box below, so make sure you go check that out and sign it up. The first four were absolutely amazing. I watched all the videos today, and I am so excited for this week's release. Guys, you know where to find us. That's Oz Queendom and the Queendom Cast. But for now, it is time to get down. So let's get stuck in with Katie Richardson.
So I'm gonna hang it up for everyone to see, and you can't stop me, cause I'm the queen of the castle. Get down, you dirty rascal. Get down.
Hey Queens, how's it going? Welcome back to the Queendom Podcast. I am here with the amazing Katie Richardson from the West End, the MD out there. Hey Katie, how are you going?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I am fabulous. I'm so excited to chat music and get into the nitty gritty of this show. So before we get started, let's jump into some quick fire questions just to get warmed up.
Okay, I'm ready.
Is tomato fruit or vegetable?
It's a fruit.
It's a fruit. Decisive too. Well done. What's your favorite instrument?
See, I always wanted to be able to play the cello, so I'm going to say cello.
Yes. What is your favorite orchestration of a show? Like, what's your favorite show that you were like, yes, I love how that sounds?
Such a good question. I'm not going to be able to choose one. Is that allowed?
That's completely fine.
I think Last 5 Years is really, really interesting, like the original. And I MD'd that when I was at university, and I just had the best time. And it's just like the fact there's two cellos, but only one violin, no drums. Like, it's all just really cool. But I think at the moment, like, I mean, obviously Tom Curran for Six the Musical is a genius.
Yeah.
But my absolute hero is Alex Lacamoire. Yeah. I think that's how you say his surname.
Like
he does such an amazing job of Hamilton, but every time I go back and listen to In the Heights, like the orchestrations are just so
Heights,
beautiful.
Man, Heights is a banger of a show. Like,
yeah, it has a real place in my heart, that show.
I remember watching it for the first time and getting to blackout. Just whatever happened in there, I was like, whoa, like this is intense.
linen lack.
And it's just the fact that everyone, when you get to the end of 96,000, everyone just thinks it's the interval. Like when I saw it in London, I saw it at Southwark Playhouse, and it wasn't the Broadway production. It was like the London version, completely different team. And there was a standing ovation at the end of 96,000 and everyone thought it was the interval. And the actors just had to wait for so long for everyone to be like, oh, hang on, you're carrying on. Yeah, it's a great show.
That is amazing. So we've spoken about musical direction. How did you get into theatre? How did you get into this world?
So I remember going to see my first musical. My parents took me to see like the tour of like the UK tour of like Happy Days, the musical in Birmingham, which is I'm from the Midlands, and I remember going to see that and just being like enamoured with it. And that's kind of my earliest memory of the theatre. But I also grew up in Stratford upon Avon, which is where Shakespeare was born. So I also had this, like, when you went to school in Stratford-upon-Avon, we got these things called red cards, which basically meant if you were a student of a school in Stratford, you could go to any show at the Royal Shakespeare Company for £3.50, which is like $7, Aussie dollars.
Yeah.
And like, I growing up just used to go to the RSC like once a month. And just thinking that was normal and what people did, like when you're a kid, you don't realize that what your life is different.
Yeah.
So I guess like I've just always gone to theatre. And so I never really felt like I joined it. Like I was just so lucky.
It was kind of like a natural progression into working.
Yeah. And I was really lucky. My parents aren't creative. Well, I mean, they're creative as people, but they don't do creative jobs at all. But like my mum really, really loves the arts. So she was also like loved taking us to the theatre. And I don't know, I guess it was like a natural progression. Like I went to youth theatre, a really amazing one where I'm from, and then went to uni to do music, but did loads of the musical theatre societies as MD for them. And then I just everything I did just cemented further in my mind that theatre was what I wanted to do. So
yeah, amazing. Yeah. What instruments can you play?
Okay, so I can play obviously piano. I sing as well, nowhere near as good as I used to. I used to actually want to be a musical theatre actor.
Yeah.
But I just also played piano. But since I've chosen MDing, like my voice has gone like, but I can sing. And then I also can play clarinet, all the saxophones, flute. I mean, I can like strum a guitar. it's not good,
yeah.
But I can like, so yeah, like wind instruments.
Yeah.
Oh, and bassoon.
Amazing. I love that. How did you find out about Six? What was your introduction to this show?
Well, when they first did the workshops, like the workshop production, so that's when the cast that are on the album first did it.
Yeah.
I didn't get to see it because it sold out, but everyone in London was sort of talking about it. And then I didn't hear about it for a while longer. And I just completely out of the blue got an email from Joe Baton, the musical supervisor, being like, hi, we're looking for a MD and you've been recommended. Can you give me a call if you're interested? And kind of the rest is history. It was completely out of the blue.
And now you're here full time on now the West End. How sick is that? So I'll skip my next two questions that I sent you and we'll go straight to working with the team. So working with Joe and Tom and everybody, what was it like to learn this material and then get to work with everyone that kind of created it to go on stage?
I mean, it was the best, but like, it was just that the process of it was really interesting for me because after I spoke to Joe, I got sent through like the script and the score and they'd done a really like base level recording of the workshop out of the desk just for what do they call it, archive.
So I
remember listening to that, and this was before I'd agreed to do it or not, and listening to it and reading the lyrics and being like, this is really good.
Yeah.
And then I was already actually contracted to like another job originally for the original Six tour we did in 2018, which everyone knows as the Edinburgh Fringe version, but it was our contract said tour because we did like a few different places. I had to leave that like halfway through the arts theatre run because I was already contracted to another job.
Okay.
And I sort of called my agent and I was like, I really want to do this. I think it's really good, but I can't do all the dates. And then the producers of Six were really gracious in that they let me do it until I could do it, and then and then leave. But then the other tour that I was contracted to got cancelled really quickly, like after 3 months or something.
Yeah.
Which was awful for everyone except for me, because it meant I got to go back to six, which was like the biggest like stroke of fate ever, really. Because when I originally did it, obviously we didn't know that it was going to be in the West End for an extended time. We thought it was just a limited season, so that was all really cool. But then from taking that, from listening to the like the demos essentially, and then going into the rehearsal room, like all of the tracks were redone, everything was reorchestrated, little bits were rewritten, and being in the rehearsal room, just watching it create, was just, we also, I don't know, I can't speak for everyone else, but I did have this idea when I was like, I think this is going to be really good. But we weren't really sure, but it was that really magical thing where like we just had everyone, every department, including like the lighting designer, the sound designer, the costume designer, like everyone involved was just like so invested in the project, and we all got on so well, and really I think had a shared vision of Toby and Lucy's vision of what they wanted it to be. So it's just this really magical thing, and we were all really in there and just like all clicked at the same time. And I think that's why it works so well, because it's just, and it's also just so cohesive across departments. Like a lot of others have worked on, there'll be conflict between like choreography and music or whatever, but that just wasn't the case. And it's also because Toby and Lucy just had such a clear vision of what they wanted from it, that everyone, they just communicated it really well, and everyone just worked together to achieve it. But yeah, it was awesome. It's just really funny because it's like those people just became my mates. And like none of us were well known at all at that time. And it's what it was watching it become well known over the past 2 years is has been so strange. Like I was with Toby the first time he got recognized in the street. And we were afterwards, we were all like, oh my God, can you believe that just happened? You just got recognized. And now it's like obviously a completely different thing.
Since then, you've been on a plane, flown down to Australia to help with auditions down here and the lot. And we'll touch on the growth of the show later. What is it like reading a show on paper before you've seen it on stage?
It's weird. It's something that I have to do obviously every job, and you never, it's unusual that you have an actual idea of what it's going to be like. And I don't think, I think even when, you know, having just said that like Toby and Lucy had this really clear image, but like it, everything sort of happens in the rehearsal room. So like I remember reading it and being like, these lyrics are really funny, they're really clever and snappy, they're kind of unlike anything I've heard before. But it's only, it becomes what it is in the rehearsal room. So like even reading it when you're like, this is really great, you actually have no idea, because at the same time it can be really, really great and then just have the wrong creative team work on it, and then it doesn't become amazing. It just stays, you know, great, which isn't enough. So it's weird. It's like when you bake a cake and you put all the ingredients in and you put it in the oven as one thing and it comes out a completely different thing. That's the only way I can explain it. Like the ingredients are all good, but it just transforms.
That's a perfect one. I love that. That work.
I thought of that right then.
On the spot. There we go.
I'll remember that for next time. But yeah, and I just remember having this really clear, there's two moments that really, really, no, three, let's say three, that really stick out for me in the creation of it. The first one was when we first opened in Norwich, and like Norwich is like, it's a city in the UK, but it's quite small, and it's in quite a rural part. So it's quite far away from many of the main hubs. So Six is a little out there for Norwich. And I remember like after like the second performance, just suddenly having this moment playing it and looking at the lights and stuff and everything and being like, this is like really camp.
Yeah.
And what I hadn't realized before that moment, but I was just like, this isn't like anything else. Like this is, I've never seen anything like this before.
Yeah.
And then it was our like first preview in Edinburgh, where we sort of finished, we're Six button. And then the audience just went insane, like screaming all on their feet, whatever. And I remember me and all the girls, like band and cast, all looked at each other like, oh my God. And that was the first moment we had any like realization that it was going to be this big thing. And I just remember that moment really, really vividly.
Yeah.
And I've heard the other girls talk about that in interviews as well. And then the whole of Edinburgh was crazy. And then it was, we were really worried that like Edinburgh sold out and it was this really amazing thing, but we were going to take it to London and like London audiences are really cynical and whatever, and it wouldn't do as well. And then it was the press night in London when the atmosphere was electric and the audience went insane. And that was an audience of like agents and reviewers. And we were all literally like, oh my God, I think we did it. It's just like three really distinct moments of being like, okay.
Yeah. I was so excited for this interview before that moment when I realized how long you've been with the show. So this is going to be great. I'm so, so excited right now.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So besides MD, what is your role with Six? Because obviously you've been out here to do the audition panel and that type of thing. So what is your kind of role in the team?
So I'm the UK Associate Musical Supervisor and the Australia Associate Musical Supervisor.
Perfect.
Which basically means Joe is the International Music Supervisor, so he is the overseer, but yeah, it basically means that I am his right-hand woman in the UK and in Australia, so I basically have to look after it when he's not there. I mean, obviously, Australia, it's like more of a title than it is what I actually do, because he has another, I can't remember what their title is, but there's someone else that looks after the show in Australia when it's on. But I was basically, it's like acting musical supervisor. He wasn't available to come and do the auditions, yeah, in Australia, so I represented him.
Yeah, cool.
But in the UK, it's I look after the UK productions when he's not there.
Amazing. Let's touch on Australia real quick. What was it like going from coming into the show where the show was the UK tour that you joined already cast at that point of you coming on board, or were you a part of the kind of
process? So I didn't, the 2018 tour, which is like what we know as the original West End cast, yes, I didn't cast them. Okay. I joined just for the rehearsal process, but ever since then I think I've cast every cast except for Broadway.
So what's it like seeing the talent pool dwindle down to the 9 or 10 in each cast and being able to see the talent really cool out there?
It's really cool. It's funny because we often have this thing where people pop out as like perfect for the show, but we don't know what role they're going to be in. So
it's so cool to hear it from the other side of the desk, because obviously we've spoken to a ton of the girls about their experience being the auditionees. So it's really cool, yeah, to hear your experience. So do you want to break down what your role is as MD? What does a musical director do?
Okay, so I think that musical director is like 80% people management and 20% music, which a lot of people don't really realize. So like a musical director is once the show's up and running, the director isn't there every day. They leave. Same with the choreographer, same with the musical supervisor, same with the composers, everyone. So it's kind of me and the company manager that are the two managers. In the building. So that's like the people management side of things. I help with like pastoral care, if you use like the school term. But then I also am responsible for the music. So that means that in rehearsals, I'm responsible for rehearsing it with any new cast members. Like we had to do a few put-ins in the West End this year because of different people's, yeah, availabilities, which was running rehearsals in the day to get the girls ready to go in the show. I'm also responsible for keeping the upkeep of the show. So that's like making sure the vocals stay clean, helping with vocal health, making sure that the band play what they're supposed to, yeah, blah, 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 blah. And then I'm also the head of music in the building, which means I'm a head of department, and that's a bit of a thing in theatre. So you have the head of sound, head of lighting, head of the stage manager. I'm never called head of music, I'm always called musical director, but we're all like the same level in terms of technical, yeah, departments, which means that there's two things involved with that. It means that when there's a technical meeting, I'm representing the music department, but also in a situation where you have to call a show stop, if there's been an emergency or whatever, only the heads of department are allowed to say, I need, okay, to stop. And I'm one of the people that can say that. And then the way it works is everyone has to agree. And then the stage manager makes the final call, but it's only the head of department that is allowed to say, I need to have a show stop now.
I did not know that. I've learned something today, yeah, guys. This is great.
Yeah, so there's certain people that are allowed to do that in theatre, and the MD is one of them. And then also on a very like day-to-day basis, I take vocal warm-up and I conduct the show.
We'll jump straight in to the conduction side of things. What was it like learning that you were going to be on stage and not kind of hidden behind a wall or under the stage for this show?
I was kind of okay with that because weirdly professionally, I reckon I've 50% of my MDing jobs, or actually maybe 2/3, I've been on stage. Just out of coincidence, and I think it's really in fashion in theatre to have the band on stage. Like, the band being hidden in a pit is kind of out of fashion at the moment, and I've been really lucky that I've worked on a lot of new productions. Yeah. So I think just purely because of that, I ended up being more on stage. And the thing that really freaked me out is when I learned that the lights are time-coded, which means they're connected to the click track. And track runs through almost the whole of six, not with any vocal on at all, not with much music on, but a lot of the sound effects, like electronic, like techno stuff, you can't create that live really. So that's all on track. And there's a lot of like extra percussion. And so because of that, we have like a metronome in our ear the whole time, and all the lights are programmed to the exact time codes from that. So when I found out that I was I'm used to being in charge of like the whole band and the cast, but when I found out I was essentially in charge of the lighting as well, I was like,
and I know you cue a few lights as well, don't you?
So that just little ones. So there's a few that are in between the tracks. Like if you think of pre-Holbein, the bit where they all go off and get their roughs, and there's loads of haze, and when Anna Fries is doing her speech, I'm playing, that's all sound effects that I trigger. So I'm playing them, they're like programmed to notes on the keyboard. So you hear a sound effect, but I've pressed go essentially. But I also have to nod for those so that the lighting department can get the light change at the same time. There's a lot goes on in in
the MDC.
I just
want to have all your technical guys in a room just to chat and nerd out about the technical side of the show, because it is...
Oh, yeah, you should totally approach the sound designer and the lighting designer, because they're just so interesting. And, like, the number of things that they think about that I don't even have any comprehension of what they are. They've already sorted it out.
A couple of the girls have brought
up
some of the like the lighting cues and everything that they freak out over, that I'm like, right? Like, there's just so many little things that I'm just like, oh.
Yeah.
Another big...
And they have to hit their marks as well. Like, it's like, okay, so you have 1 meter square, you have to stand in the middle of it. And they're like...
What was it like knowing that you were going to do this whole 75-minute show without sheet music in front of you?
Well, originally I didn't have to do it without sheet music. It's not in the, I don't know if it is now, but it wasn't originally that the MDs had to, the band had to, but I didn't, because we were like, it's too hard. But then I just did it a lot, and now I know it off by heart. And now it's kind of standard everywhere that all the MDs do it off by heart, but I don't know. Like, I didn't find it very hard to learn, because I just sort of learned it as choreography, and I just did it loads. So, like, by the time I'd been doing it for, like, sorry, that was my laptop. By the time I'd been doing it for, like, three months, I'd say, I knew it. So it was kind of all right. Alice, the drummer in the UK, she was not very pleased when she found out. She had to do it by heart, because she'd never done... Like, Terry and Amy, who are the guitar and the bassist in the West End, they have a really big history of playing in bands, more than playing in theatre, which is perfect for six, because it looks like a rock concert. So they were, like, completely fine with it. But Alice is like, a theatre pit drummer. So she was like, oh, my God. But
I didn't realise until we had a switch of MD in Australia, and I saw the sheet music come out, and I was like, whoa. That has never been there before. I could always see her face. Was it?
Yeah.
And then I mentioned it to one of the girls at stage door. They're like, yeah, we do it. I was like, damn, like, that's sick. Like, I love them.
Yeah. The depth, the cover MDs here have sheet music as well, because it's too stressful. If you haven't done it in 4 months and you're in charge and you've only got one show, it's like, no, just have the sheet music.
Talk to me about life on the West End. What's it like knowing that you're pretty much a full-time musical director in one of the biggest shows in London right now, and get to do that as a job every night?
I think it still hasn't really like settled in that's what I was doing. It's really cool, and it's like it's kind of one of my goals in life, really. So I don't know. It's amazing. Like that's the only way I can explain it is it's amazing. It's really cool. And we've had a really amazing time with Six. And it's been this like crazy roller coaster. But I think because it's always been like going up like this, there was never like a massive moment of like, oh my God, we're suddenly on the West End. It was just sort of like gradual. And it just really showed me that hard work pays off. Like everyone involved in the show is grafted, which is why it is where it is. But yeah, it's really cool. The lifestyle, I think, only suits certain people, but like I'm a natural night owl, yeah. So I love it. It's kind of, the thing that's weird is like people, if you have friends that have normal jobs, it kind of gets hard to see them. But that's kind of a small sacrifice.
Yeah, amazing. Were you a part of the team that was on stage for the Olivia X? What was that like playing Royal Albert Hall?
It was the most terrifying thing I've ever done, and I think I ever will do. I cannot explain the nerves. I've never felt anything like it. It was nuts. That place is massive. It's massive, and the Arts Theatre, which is where Six is on in London, is only 350. It's the smallest West End theatre. Yeah. So we're used to doing it in there. We did it at some bigger venues on tour, but the Royal Albert Hall is like 5,000, and like from the stage to the top back of the Royal Albert Hall, like it's so far away that you can't really see people. Like Did I drop out?
You were saying something about seeing.
What was I saying?
Is what I, the last thing I heard?
Oh yeah. The Royal Albert Hall is so big that like it's really tall and really far. Yeah. So when you look at the people on the back at the top, like they're so small that they're like dots. Yeah. Like it's crazy how big that place is. And also we like, I think because none of us had any expectation of Olivier's at all. And I remember the day the Olivier nominations came out was actually my first day back at Six after having done that other job. And I was just watching the Olivier nominations because I watch them every year. And the first one was Best Supporting Actress in a Musical. And it was like the Queens of Six. And I remember we all just went, oh. And suddenly my phone's blowing up and we're all texting each other like, what's happening? And then it was like gradually went through. We were like, what? And then it got the music one. And I was like on the phone to Tom Curran crying. And then it was like Best New Musical, Six. And it was just, we all got into work that day and we were all just crying and crying and crying. Like, couldn't believe it. Like, I just had no idea that might happen at all. And then, so because of that, we were all so excited to be nominated anyway, because we're not one of the, like, it's a successful show now, but like at that time, it was still like the small little outsider show. The Olivier's was mental. We were just so nervous.
For anyone trying to do the maths at home, Royal Albert Hall is 15 times bigger than the Arts, so a fair few more people to perform to.
Yeah, and there's a scary thing about performing at the award ceremonies that I think a lot of musical theatre people talk about. I've heard them talk about. It's my first experience of it. Is that you always do like a weird cut or like a medley of songs from the show, so it's not the same as what you do in the show.
What was it like trying to put that together? Because it was the ex-wives six mashup that you did at the wasn't it?
Yeah, which I love. I thought it was a stroke of genius. And when we all first heard it, we were so excited. But it was a lot of time because we had to have rehearsals in the daytime, like had to have a music rehearsal with the band, music rehearsal with the cast, choreography rehearsals. Because they didn't change it a lot, but they changed it a bit. And obviously the Royal Albert Hall stage is huge, so they had to practice it on a massive markup rather than the Arts Theatre, which is tiny. So it was a lot of work. And also, like, of course, we wanted it to be perfect because it's the biggest performance ever, and it's gonna be televised, and so we had to get it perfect. So we drilled it and drilled it and drilled it whilst doing shows in the evening. And also obviously they had to remember the show version versus the award ceremony version, which was hard. And a really funny thing happened, actually. We've been rehearsing so much leading up to the Olivier's. The Olivier's is on a Sunday night. At six, we do two shows Saturday, two shows Sunday. But we had the Sunday evening off to go to the Olivier's, but we still had to do the Sunday matinee. So we did two shows the Saturday, then went to the Olivier's tech rehearsal at like 11 p.m. Then on Sunday morning, we had to be there at 9 a.m. to do the dress rehearsal for the Olivier's, which we had to do out of order so that we could get to do our matinee, then get changed and come back. Like, it was the craziest weekend. But so we did at the Olivier's, the start of Ex-Wives, JJ said, like, I think it's tonight Royal Albert Hall we are, she said. And we'd done it so much with her swapping. And before, and every time before the show at the Arch, she was like, say London, say London, don't say Royal Albert Hall. And the Saturday night, we were so tired and we'd done it so much, she came on and she went, and tonight, Royal Albert Hall in the Arts Theatre. And we were crying. It was so funny. The audience was so confused. It was just very, very funny.
It's hilarious. Speaking of things outside Royal Albert Hall, what was it like putting together things like West End Live and that type of thing? What was your role in that?
Just sort of the rehearsal role. So just making sure that it was prepared and the vocals were clean and stuff. Because anything like that that's televised, same as when we went on Britain's Got Talent, like those ones we actually didn't do a cut. We did the full numbers as they are in the show, which is better. Like the girls have to hit different marks on the stage, but otherwise it was all the same. But we just drilled it and drilled it and drilled it to make it perfect because you know it's going to be on YouTube forever, basically. So that was my role, was basically just like making sure the singing was perfect. And yeah, West End Live is cool because it's like, I think it's the closest you get to like being a rock star because you're playing a festival, but it's just a musical theatre festival. But it's, nowhere near as stressful as the Olivier's, because also for West End Live, we used a backing track, the band didn't appear. Just because you have 5 minutes to set up, it's not possible. So that kind of took the pressure off me a little bit. It just meant I could focus on the cast, whereas at the Olivier's, we were like,
Where was I going? Oh, I've lost it, guys. I've done it again. But it's okay. Let's talk about your favourite moments in the show, because obviously you played quite a few of them. So what is your favourite song to play?
My favourite song to play is definitely I Don't Need Your Love and I Don't Need Your Love remix. Because it's fun on piano. It's my favourite song anyway, but I just think it's really funky, and also the remix is like so satisfying, and it's the point of the show, and it just, we all get to be really like girl power, almost come a bit out of character and just sort of tell it, which it always, I really feel it sometimes. Like, it's one of the only bits, like, you know, when you do a show, I don't know how many times I've done it, maybe 500, like you become a bit desensitized to it, because like obviously you've done it so many times, but that is the bit that really still like packs a punch with me, like the girls just being like, we're taking back control, like that whole bit is just a really big moment, and it's the message of the show, isn't it?
Amazing. So I figured out what I was going to say. What's it like performing with an all female band and all female cast?
It's the best. That's the only way I can explain it. It's, and also like, that has made waves. Like the male versus female proportion in musicians in theatre and MDs in theatre in the UK is like, I think the last time the Musicians Union here did a survey, it was 90% male. Like, it's really made a thing. And like, the, my favourite thing about it with Six was that we never did any press being like, all female band, never advertised as all female. Never, ever, ever, because we didn't want to use it as a gimmick. And it just meant that when the curtains dropped, it was like, oh shit, it's all female. But never advertised as that. And that was just my favorite thing, because it was just like not making a big thing out of it. It was just like, this is a thing in this show. And it's almost entirely female backstage.
Yeah, that's amazing. What's the kind of vibe like walking into the building every day? How do you get ready for a show? What is your routine to get ready for a show?
So I have to, my warm-up is always an hour 15 before the show. So I come in for that, take the warm-up. And we always do, in the Arts, we always do like a circle time at the end of warm-up with the company manager, where we always sort of talk about things that have happened on our day. Like Sunita, the company manager, gives any you know, notices that she has to. And then we always go around and say something that we're grateful for. And we do that every day. So that gets us all into like a positive headspace. And then I usually have some food and a cup of tea. And then I put my makeup on. And then I have to, I've suffered quite a lot of injury over the past 2 years from something about this show has just made my shoulders really injured. So I have to do quite, now I'm recovered, I have to do like a quite extensive warm up. So we have physios and like occupational therapists and performance coaches that work with us all on our like own physiology. So we learn how to manage stuff, I guess. And then so I have like a 15 minute set of warm-ups I have to do for my shoulders and my wrists and my arms and my neck. So I do that, then get into costume, pre-show pee, I guess.
And what's it like having your own costume for this show? And
I'm it's cool. It's the sweatiest thing in the world, that costume. It's the PVC trousers are so hot. Yeah, it is cool. I have had it before, but never quite so out there. Like, it's always been like a costume sort of made up of my own clothes, kind of. So, yeah, it's cool.
That's sick. So we'll get back onto the favorite kind of train that we were there. What is your favorite song to hear every night?
I normally love listening to, much as I love our first cast, if we ever have an alternate on, I just always pay extra attention to them because it's really nice to hear like that everyone has their own riffs and stuff. We make really sure of that. So it's always nice to hear like the variety. I honestly just love I Don't Need Your Love.
As soon as I started asking the question, I was like, it's going to be the same answer. Like,
yeah, although I have to say, I think Ex-Wives is so exciting.
What was it like for you getting to sit on stage for those first few shows, like in the arts and out on tour, just any show really, getting to sit on stage, seeing the girls hit that kind of six boom at the end of the, like the main part and then the end of the mega six and seeing the crowd react. What's it like for you to be able to sit up the top on the stairs and kind of just watch everyone react to this?
It feels like being a rock star. Like, it's crazy. And I think like on other musicals, I've forgotten what other musicals are like. Like where you get like polite applause at the end of the number, whereas six is like screaming. So it's become like my normal, but it just totally isn't normal. Like, it's just like being a rock star. The reaction's like being a rock star. It's amazing.
What's your favorite harmony in the show?
I saw this question in like my prep questions and I was like, I know exactly what it is. It is I Don't Need Your Love, but that is the hard bit that at the end of the song. So after like the riff section, they do a really crunchy harmony where all the girls sing in unison, but they're all on their own note. And it's the bit that happens at the very end of the I Don't Need Your Love remix and also at the end of the Mega Six. However, the harmonies are actually different. it sounds like it's the same moment, but the harmonies are different in the remix to the Mega Six. And when they get it right, it's so, so satisfying, but it's so hard to learn.
That is...
Every time I've caught the show, they're always like, this is too hard.
I've done shows like Les Mis and Dogfight where there's big, chunky, like six-part harmonies. What do these harmonies look like on the page? Because harmonies in Les Mis and Dogfight look really cool when you look at them and read them. What's it like seeing the music?
They kind of look like the girls spend most of the show in three parts, two on each. There's only moments where they pop into six, but it looks crunchy because there's not on bigger shows you usually have it split SATB or whatever, so it's a bit more split out with the male voices, but because we've only got female voices, it's like really squished and this is a stave and there's a lot of notes. That's what it looks like.
Amazing. I thought of that question a couple of days ago and I was like, I really want to ask this because I love looking at like cool harmonies on the page and just looking at them and like, this is going to sound sick. Before you even hear the notes, you're just like, I got this. This is going to sound really, really cool.
Yeah.
So overall, with your whole journey, it's been nearly 2.5, nearly 3 years now. So go you. What's the best experience been with Six that you've had?
Probably the Olivier's. I guess that's not very surprising, but it just felt like a really massive moment for us. Like the underdog of that level even being there, and the whole of theatre in London, which is like a really intimidating group with a really like long-standing history of, you know, the rich tradition of British theatre, whatever, all in that room. It just felt like such a massive achievement. And I mean, like, it was disappointing that we didn't win, but it almost didn't matter.
And
that's
really cool. I like that. That it's almost...
Sorry, carry on. I was going to say, I was in Broadway for the press night on Broadway that didn't happen. So I feel like that would have been probably the coolest.
Yeah.
But I did manage to get a photo outside the Broadway theatre, and that was really surreal, like walking from Times Square and just seeing the Six sign on the Brooks Atkinson. I was like...
Not even that. Like, I remember, like, I was in New York about 2 weeks before you guys went into previews there, and walking into Times Square, looking around, and then seeing the big purple billboard, I was like, damn, like, I've got a video of me on my phone, like, literally just crying, because I was like, oh my god. And then literally walk down that street, see the Brooks all lit up, and it's just like, oh, it's just, it was special. Oh, amazing. Now I'm getting all emotional. This is great. Let's talk about something you're working on currently. I'm just trying to do the maths in my head. So at time of recording, Sunday Session starts this week. Is that right?
The first video has come out this week,
So we're a week later. So you guys have already seen the first set of Sunday Sessions. Talk me through Sunday Sessions, what it is, what you're aiming to do, and use this time to kind of plug it away so people...
Yeah, amazing. So Sunday Sessions is I originally started it as a live that we used to do at the Arts Theatre on my Instagram between shows on a Sunday, just to sing, basically just to hear everyone sing stuff, because all the girls are ridiculous. And, you know, we only get to hear them sing one song a day, and to, you know, play with some other music and just have some fun. But since the theatre closures, a lot of us find ourselves without income, and I also, you know, I'm really missing basically being silly and making music with my friends, and like, I know a lot of our audiences feel the same way, you know, like missing the theatre, missing whatever. So I kind of was like, there must be a way that I can put all these things together. So I've created Sunday Sessions, which is a subscription service. And you pledge a subscription fee once per month. It's really small and affordable. I like to think of it as a pledge rather than a fee. And it's a pledge to support us while we're out of work, and so we can keep creating. And then if you are a subscriber, you have access to exclusive videos, which subscribers don't have access to, which are posted to the site. And we will normally be releasing one per week with a West End star. So it's basically, we draw a song from a hat. They have a shortlist of eight, and the song is drawn from a hat on Instagram Live. And then we go off the live. I have to sight read and record it, the backing track, send it to them, and they have to just have a go at singing it. And it's like first attempt. Unfortunately, there's no software that's good enough, which means we can actually do it live. So we're doing like first takes to try and make it as live as possible. Then I edit it together, post it to the website. So we go live at 6 p.m. UK time on Sundays, and the song will be posted by 7 p.m. UK time. But the video is just posted like a YouTube video. So it doesn't matter where you are in the world, what time zone, you can just watch it whenever. But yeah, the fun thing about it is that the guys they get like 15 minutes notice of what they have to record. So it means that it just gets really silly, and it should be cool. It's the website for it is sundaysessions.live. All the lives will be on my Instagram, which is at KTR Richardson. I think I got all the main points. Oh yeah, so this week is the launch week. So I'm doing four as like the launch week. So I'm doing four lives in 4 days. The first one is actually today, but all the videos have been posted on.
Amazing. Sunday. And we've got some amazing guests on the launch week. We're listening to this kind of a week late. we're a day off the second week. Are you doing, you're releasing a video next week as well, aren't you?
Yeah.
This is going to get confusing week. If you guys are listening at home, because we're out of whack. But so we've already had Courtney Bowman, Nat, Luke Bayer, and Millie. I watched the live like 5 minutes before jumping on with you, and I was just like, oh, this is going to be so cool. I'm so excited. I have signed up, guys. So if you haven't already, that was sundaysessions.live. I will pop the link down below for you guys to do that. Please do. Please show your support, because this is going to be an amazing little venture, and I can't wait to see everything come together. It's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, and as is exemplified by Luke, it's not going to be all six people. It's going to be West End people. So that's
yeah,
quite cool
I'm
as well.
So excited. When I saw Luke, I was like, yes. And for anyone that's kind of missed all the hype, this was what the whole piano picture was about a couple of weeks ago. So yeah, there we go. Before we wrap up, what's some advice for anyone wanting to get into musical direction, orchestras, bands in the theatre world? Do you have any advice for those people that are wanting to know how? Or
the first one is just practice your instrument. As much as you can when you're younger, whatever that might be. If there's more than one that you love, don't feel that you have to choose one. Like, I remember at school being told like you have to focus, but I think it's kind of cool if you have more than one string to your bow. And then but I went to do music at university, but a lot of people do music at music college, or one of my mates who's an MD like did physics or something and just always kept piano as a hobby. So like, if I was like, great, I can only do music, so that's cool. But yeah don't feel you have to do music is what I mean. And then the best thing you can do really is just try and stay as involved in the theatre world as possible, and then you'll get to meet people. Don't be afraid to cold email and write to people. You know, make videos of yourself playing and send them in, I guess. It feels like luck when you get there, but actually when I look back on it, there was a lot of work going up to it. It just doesn't, you can't see necessarily the direct path between the work you did and the result, because it goes like 100%. This.
There's ups, but, downs, yeah. Ins and outs. Yeah. Like this podcast, guys, like I'll be real with you, like all these interviews that we're doing right now, cold messages. I don't think I'd ever spoken to Katie before. I was like, hey, come on the podcast. She's like, yay. Right. So you just got to toss it out into the universe, throw it up in the air and see what comes out of it, and work hard.
Exactly.
All right. That pretty much brings us to the end. If you guys want to follow Katie on Instagram, it's Katie R. Richardson. I'll drop that at down below so you can go show her some love. Keep an eye out for Sunday Sessions, sundaysessions.live. Links down below as well. I'm plugging the hell out of it because it's going to be amazing, guys. You don't want to miss it. as we wrap up, Katie. Oh, I forgot to tell you where you can follow me. If you're listening to this point, you probably already know, but that's Oz Queendom and the Queendom Cast, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. What is the biggest thing you miss about the show, being away from it right now?
I think just like my friends. it's like having a group of 20 sisters, that show. Like, you know, we laugh together, we cry together, we scream at each other, we make up. Like, it's literally like having 20 sisters, and I just, I miss them a lot. So probably
amazing.
That.
All right, Queens. Thank you for coming and hanging out with us, Katie. I really appreciate you putting the time aside and coming and have a chat about music. And thank you, Queens, for putting the time aside in your day to come and listen to us. Have fun. We will catch you next week with a brand new episode of the Queendom Podcast. And until then, see you later. Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.